Hey and welcome back to Scalescape. I'm your host, Justin Chu. Joining me today is Fion Leung, the mastermind behind Time Auction, a charity that connects anyone with inspiring leaders. How it works simply is that if you put in 15 hours of volunteer time, then you get to meet an inspiring person of your choice. Time Auction has amassed close to 74,000 volunteer hours across 9 cities, and it's not stopping anytime soon. This is the Time Auction story. Enjoy. Fion, super amazing, super nice to have you in on the podcast today. I've been wanting to do this with you for the longest time ever since, you know, back in Noti, when you hired me actually as an intern to Noti. I've been wanting to have this conversation with you. So thank you so much for coming onto the podcast.
No, thanks for having me. It's been so long.
Could you introduce yourself and sort of how you ended up founding Time Auction and maybe what Time Auction does?
Sure, yeah. We started Time Auction as a side project. So what we do is basically open up the opportunity to learn from, you know, just any expert in their field. Typically, we host a dinner or lunch with a featured guest, and anyone can come join as long as they volunteer 10 hours of their time to any charity. So the concept is really simple, kind of like a democratized version of, you know, what Warren Buffett does for, you know, his charity lunch. But anyone can join, and every event we have is very small. So usually just maximum 15 people. So a round table, essentially the guests, the featured guests donating, you know, 2 hours having this meal, meeting 15 people, everyone does 10 hours. So their time would have indirectly contributed like 150 volunteer hours to charity. So that's the, you know, core thing of what we do. And we started 6 years ago outside of me and my co-founder. We used to work in finance. So we just thought, oh, this would be fun to do. And we want to learn from everybody. So we just thought, oh, what the hell, let's just try it. So, you know, when we first met, we just started for maybe it was like a first or second year when you were interning with us back in the day. So yeah, that's how it started. And that's kind of what we do.
No, that's super interesting. Like it's so amazing to see how much Time Auction has grown through the years. And I you know, I'm a huge fan of the idea because it's so simple. What you're doing is you're just connecting people with people that can drive value to each other on an individual level, but then at the same time, able to drive that value back into the community. What I want to learn more about is sort of how, you know, that kind of ideation process and maybe how you thought of this, such an innovative idea to give back to the community.
Yeah, I think, it started actually, we had a third co-founder, his name is David. So what he did back in college was, it was literally an auction. That's why we have auction in our name. So he would have a lecture hall of like students in there, and then he would ask like companies like Apple, let's say, to donate an iPhone, and everybody would put up their hand and bid and say, hey, this year I'm going to do like, you know, 100 hours. This year I'm going to do 160 volunteer hours. So the highest bidder would get it as long as they really complete the number of hours within that year. So we met and then we kind of changed the model, and we all started at the same time where we thought, hey, you know, like it, instead of, you know, donating a product where you can kind of see how this actually is kind of paying someone to do volunteer work, we thought, hey, why don't we just try to get something that is invaluable? And back then, my co-founder Sui and I, we were working in finance, and we didn't really think that we would be in the industry for, you know, the next 20, 30 years, having a quarter life crisis. So we thought, you know, we would really love to see how people can like be really passionate about something and you know, have a really successful career out of it. So we just thought, oh, we kind of combine the two idea and let's just try it. What the hell? So we just kind of, you know, snowball and started from there.
Yeah. No, amazing. And, you know, like to see it from growing from just a side project back in, you know, 2014, 2015, and then seeing it scale and to expand into different cities and different markets. What I want to learn more about is sort of that that strategy that you have in expanding growth towards the different cities and the different chapters. Because, you know, I'm sure there are different elements of, you know, what makes this, what would make this successful, maybe in terms of the mentors that you're looking to engage with, things like that. So could you maybe talk us through that kind of go to market in the different geographies and different cities that you've had?
Yeah, I think for us, it's everything we do is very grassroots. I think this was, you know, rooted in how we started the project. So when we first started the project, we just asked people who are, you know, first, second, third degree out, and we thought, you know, oh, it'd be great to ask this person, and then let's say founder of NineGag. He was, Ray was one of our first guests, and we got introduced to him through, you know, me asking a friend to introduce us, and he said yes, like really, really soon. And then we had that meeting. So we went to like universities to like hand out flyers, and, you know, Hong Kong U, HKU, we just kind of like took time off work to like do that. And that's how we had the first meeting. So it kind of grew from, you know, building blocks like that. It was like tiny bit, tiny bit. And when we got to, we did that for the first like 2.5 years before we did this full time. So in Hong Kong, we grew to having 2 events per week, from, you know, just having 30 events a year to like over 100. And then we thought maybe we should try, you know, bring it to other cities. And it started because one of our past attendees, Athena, she used to study at Hong Kong U. She came to our event when we were running as a side project, and then she went back to Singapore and she wanted to bring it there. So we thought, oh, let's just try doing that. And she launched a chapter in Singapore, and they went really well. So we thought, oh, that is kind of like a test for us, right? So it worked. And then we thought, oh, let's just kind of scale up on this concept. And then we just, you know, started putting, you know, openings out there in other cities. People apply to bring this concept to their cities. So that's how it kind of grew from there. And then it's all very grassroots on their side as well. So they would invite guests, they would go to their local universities, they would go to their organizations to promote. So it kind of really spread with that approach.
Yeah, no, I really, I'm inspired by, you know, what you've just said, because with entrepreneurship and building a product that you want to scale and that you find meaning in, like it's really, you're right, it's really about that grassroots approach and about really taking those, taking that time and putting the grind in, right? And really, you know, like you said, going to Hong Kong University to hand out flyers and to really get people on board and to really, you know, take that first step to be proactive about the product that you're building. And I think it's wonderful. I think it's a great message that I think founders these days really need to be more cognizant of, because when it comes to building this and when it comes to scaling whatever company or business that they have, you know, they really have to do it with a sense of passion and a sense of purpose. I think these are the most important elements. What I do want to ask is, you know, given the COVID situation, as you can imagine, it's really halted a lot of growth and progress with a lot of different companies. But with your end, because I'm sure, you know, you haven't been able to organize a lot of the meetups and things like that. So how have you been able to sort of adapt, or what are you doing at this in this period to sort of stay afloat?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, COVID, it really, you know, obviously impact a lot of different things. So last year, we had chapters, you know, outside of Hong Kong, we had chapters in 8 cities. And Singapore was one of the first ones that started, and they have a lot of traction there. So we were like about to make an offer to hire somebody kind of on a almost full-time basis there, just right before COVID started. So it was like towards the final interview, we were going to make an offer, and then everything just kind of went, you know, locked down and everything happened. So obviously the international expansion has been kind of on hold. I mean, Hong Kong is already one of the, you know, better situation, but already we're back into lockdown again. So obviously in other cities, we're kind of on hold until we can start again. But on the other hand, I think we were kind of lucky with about the timing in this as well, because I told you we were launching a new program. So what that's about is we had, you know, with the events that we host, we have been running for the past 6 years now, you know, from side project mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. doing this full time. And we have a lot of people who come to our events. So we have a really strong community. So about, I think, over 6,000 people have attended our events. A lot of them are really diverse, because we have really diverse speakers. So from politicians to designers to artists, then the people they attract are really diverse as well. And we typically attract the crowd that are, you know, the young people who are really ambitious, think there's more to 9 to 5, and they have the kind of, you know, big questions they want to find out. So that's the type of crowd we attract. And about, I think actually more than half are working professionals. Because I think, you know, once you start working, then the more urge you have to, I need to figure out my career, I need to figure out my life. And that's when they have that quarter like crisis to like, oh, I need to like kind of see, you know, what inspiration I can get from different people. So we have a very diverse community that are like kind of, you know, tied together with these common questions and values. So we started, and we also, you know, work with a lot of charities. I mean, people have volunteered at over several hundred charities, different charities that we you know see on the platform. And we know, you know, even firsthand for ourselves, that it's really hard to find volunteers who can actually help you in a meaningful way. Meaning, like, a lot of charities actually, they don't have opportunities for you to come, you know, clean up a beach or, you know, pick up or, you know, plant trees. But what they need is people with skills, people who can help, you know, as an entrepreneur who can help you scale, a designer who can do a design for you, you know, just, you know, people like that. And we benefited a lot from just meeting our own, you know, skilled volunteers who helped us along the way. So, you know, realizing these two problems, so we started a test program where we help other charities find these skilled volunteers. And to our surprise, the response was really, really good. So we, you know, just started posting it on Instagram and putting it in an email newsletter. And since September last year, we've been running that just, you know, kind of organically for 9 months now. We matched like 900 something people to 70 something charities. And it's just really, really interesting to see, hey, people actually, they might not have time to go plant trees every weekend, but if I'm a graphic designer, I'd rather do graphic design to help charities who can, you know, see how that would impact them, help them. So with that, you know, result from the pilot program, we went to do fundraising, and now we are launching it as a, you know, one of our core programs. So coming this month, you'll see a new platform on our website, and then you can see the different kind of, you know, skill volunteer projects that other charities need. And with COVID, because, you know, we obviously didn't think about COVID when we first started, but with COVID hitting since, you know, February, March, a lot of charities had to downsize. They can no longer, you know, afford graphic designers or marketers, or, you know, they have to fire people. And on the other hand, a lot of volunteers or working people, they had to, you know, take unpaid leave and work from home, or, you know, they get laid off and they have a lot more time on their hands. So there we see that there's actually a lot more demand from NGOs and supply on the volunteer side. So the matching has been just been kind of growing actually really fast. So we've been kind of focusing our effort on here, and the events are just kind of put on hold a little bit for now and see how the gathering went.
I think that's wonderful. And I think, you know, first of all, I'm really excited to learn more about the program over the coming month. And really the second thing is I really appreciate your insight as to sort of how through this period, you've been able to pattern match and be able to see that actually with charities, like you just said, you know, while one element to that is really doing the grassroots work, right? Like really picking up the trash from the beach, helping to build houses, helping to, you know, whatever, you know, groundwork kind of thing. But then another element to that in scaling that, the operations of the charity, like you just said, putting in the skills, graphic design, helping to edit promotional videos, things like that. And you're matching skills to sort of the same value proposition that you're bringing with Time Auction. You know, I think that's wonderful. And I think that's such an innovative way to sort of, to stay ahead of the game, even during this period. And I think that's incredibly wonderful. Now, this is more personal and more interesting, but I'm curious to know sort of what the most rewarding parts of this experience, entire experience of from, you know, co-founding Time Auction all the way till now, and speaking to different mentors. You know, what are some of the most rewarding parts about it and takeaways that you've had from this experience?
If you ask me, like, you know, just specific encounters, there are just so many that I can think of. Like just seeing how, you know, our events help maybe some of the attendees stay thinking about, you know, wanting to switch career, and because of what they learned from my events, they think, oh, I'm sure this is the right path, and then they take the courage to actually go and do it. Or, you know, some people tell us, oh, you know, because of our events and the volunteer work they do, they realize people they thought, you know, they look up to are so successful, they have their own struggle, and they have a lot of different barriers along the way. And what maybe they're experiencing now at like early 20s, what the person they look up to back in the day, they were just as confused as they are. So they feel like, you know, actually everybody goes through this journey. So, you know, it's okay. It's inevitable. And on the other hand, they go to serve, like, you know, the people who are really, you think that they are, you know, most in need in society, right? Like you help disabled people. Oh, I didn't know it takes them like an hour to go through a few stations on MTR because they need to go through all these like different walkways and stuff. I think it's just the perspective that we saw that people, you know, see they change a little bit because of different things that they're exposed to outside of the comfort zone. But I think the most rewarding part is we never thought that we would be running a charity. Like, it was just a fun side project that we thought it's only fun to do after work, and we were able to kind of get so many people to do more volunteer work, to meet, to connect. So that is just something that's so totally unexpected, and it's been really fun to know.
Yeah, yeah, of course. No, that's so amazing to hear. You know, I really like that sort of, you know, over the years, what you're saying is really that sort of change in perspective, because when you're having these people that are volunteering and then doing charity, you know, it really does ground them in sort of what they might not be used to necessarily, like in their own lives. And I think that change of perspective really, I think that's what pushes us forward, having that sense of compassion, having that sense of empathy. And I think these are very good qualities that you can get out of by just doing charity and really volunteering. You know, and I think that's such a wonderful idea. I do want to ask, in terms of maybe the challenges that you faced in you know, the early stages of Time Auction, building the company, you know, what were some challenges that you faced, maybe in adoption, maybe in scaling the company, maybe in fundraising? You know, talk us through some of those and how you've been able to overcome them.
Wow, there are so many. I mean, the first time, like, we had like kind of a challenge, like when we first started, so it was just Suya and I were doing this as a side project, right? So initially, the first year, we launched 15 events. So we just put all these, you know, guest speakers on the website, people apply. Obviously, the first challenge we had is no one knows about us, right? So nobody applies. And we have like all these leaders who like kind of expecting that some youngster is going to show up. They have already done volunteer work. So obviously the first challenge is how do we get the word out there? But and there's like, I remember we were so frustrated. Like we were at, you know, our full-time job. I was at Noti. And then we had, we were going to host these events. And back then we just put them on the website. And let's say 10 people apply. And then we didn't even pencil in a date before we start promoting it. So we had these 15 events. We have like 100 something people. We're trying to find time that works for every single one of them. So we had like a full time, you know, we were a secretary, like these 10 people, like, pick 5 dates, which date worked for you? And then it was just like a crazy amount of administrative work. And then on the other hand, like when the date comes, and then back then we didn't think too much about like, you know, logging your volunteer hours early, telling us what you did. So the day before the event, or even in like if we had a dinner in that morning, a student would come tell us like, "Hey, Fionn, actually, I didn't do any volunteer work. I don't think I can come." And we're like, "What?" And then we would be, you know, have to tell the speaker, "Hey, actually, we had like 5 people, but 2 of them had to drop out," and it was so embarrassing. And we're so frustrated. Like Sue and I, we were thought about, should we yell at the student? Like we're just trying to help them. Like why are they so disrespectful? And you know all these like tiny things. But then after being so frustrated and angry, and then after we're like, okay, how can we make sure this doesn't happen again? So then we was, you know, whenever someone signs us up to an event, we were already, before we promote that event, we already pencil in a date. This is the date it's going to happen. Like if you apply, it's going to happen on that date. And then we would remind people to volunteer. Like once they sign up, let's say 2 months before the event, we'll like really like badger them and say, hey, go volunteer. This is where you can go. So we saw that, you know, frustration, those moments as just an opportunity to think what something wrong went wrong in the process. We shouldn't get emotional about it. It's just something went wrong in the process. And how can we actually change the process so that, you know, the whole process is more efficient and it's more smooth? So that's the kind of mindset that we kind of had going forward. Whenever we had any kind of challenge, we thought, okay, this is frustrating, but it's trying to tell us something. That is something that is an opportunity for us to improve on something. That's a weakness that we recognize. Yeah, I guess there are so many, but we try to see it as a very constructive way after.
I think that's amazing. And I think it's also, yeah, that's a really funny story. Because it's like when you have this really good idea, right? It's one thing that it's so simple, but then to turn that and to realize that and to execute that, it, you know, people don't know, but it takes so much effort, like you just said. It takes so much frustration, right? Because really putting out your idea into the market and testing it and validating it. And then obviously you'll hit hitches at different points of the way, but it's about how you can overcome them in a constructive manner and then to keep refining it so it's always better for the different audience in different cultures, different expansions and things like that. So I think that's wonderful. You did mention and you told me about the new program that you guys are launching in a month's time. But you know, down the line, maybe 6 to 12 months down the road, what can we expect to see from Time Auction? You know, like a year from now.
Yeah. So I think our mission is twofold, right? One is we encourage more people to volunteer. The other part of it is we open up the learning opportunities. We kind of democratize learning opportunities for people, no matter how rich or poor you are. As long as you do volunteer work, you can you know have these different you know learning opportunities. So after our launch of the volunteer program next month, hopefully we will be able to get you know just kind of scale that up. I mean, you know, with the test program, like I mentioned, we ran it for 9 months and we were able to help, I think, 70 something charities in Hong Kong to find skilled volunteers. But that is really a tip of the iceberg. Like Hong Kong has like, I don't know, like 5,000-6,000 servicing charities. It's like a huge, you know, sector. So, you know, on the other hand, there are just so many, you know, young people like us that want to help, but not sure, you know, how to go about it. So I think hopefully we can scale that up as quickly as possible. And then on the other hand, and this is something that, again, we need to kind of be creative and think about what we can do other than the events, you know, dinners and lunch, you can gonna sit down, meet the guests as a friend, ask anything you want. What more can we put on the platform that would incentivize people to volunteer and at the same time empower them? Like, is it different kind of fitness class? Is it kind of a different kind of, you know, exposure opportunity? So that is something that we need to kind of do tests along the way, and hopefully we can have a lot more different kind of experience that people can kind of redeem with their volunteer hours.
No, that's exciting, and you know, I'm really excited to keep up with the progress and to see you know how you're able to expand and to grow in the future. I do want to wrap things up by giving you an explanation to what the title of the podcast is. So Scalescape. Right. When we're talking about scaling and building a company for the masses, you know, we need to take into account the external landscape, right? The bigger picture. And so things like geography, timing, sector, product market fit, etc. What is one tip that you can give to founders to scalescaping their companies towards success?
I think all those things that, you know, are really important. But I think one thing that we've always kind of keep in mind is the product market fit. And that is something that we always do the different little tests on. So, you know, with the skill volunteer matching program is one of the tests that we do. It just so happened that it's got traction. So we know that we can invest more resources into that. But we've done a lot of different tests like this over the years. So one example would be when we have a lot of these different lunch and dinners, you know, it's open to everyone. But the people we tend to attract are obviously the young people who are more ambitious and driven. And some of them have, you know, some potential donors have said, oh, you're a charity. Like, maybe you should try to think about how you can help like the people who are more underprivileged, right? The people who might not even know who, you know, never been to Central and know who all these speakers are. And we thought, oh yeah, that makes sense. So we want to do a test on it. And we want to work with a few charities that serve these underprivileged kids. And we have these high school students who come. And we realized, you know, out of those 15 people, everybody are university students, working people, different, very diverse. And we have a few, you know, so-called, you know, underprivileged students there. What we realized after the meeting is they didn't understand, because most of our events are in English, so they didn't understand most of it, what was said. And we realized, hey, there isn't a product market fit here. It's not that we don't want to help, but we are not the ones who can help them right now. So you know, that's something that we have to be very just look at the, you know, just putting things out there and really look at the people who are involved and what the feedback is. We kind of stop exploring that. I mean, it's still open to everybody. There are still people who are from different kind of under-resourced school to come, but we stop kind of focusing on just serving the underprivileged sector. And what we realize is actually, hey, you know, because we've got all these people who are so-called more educated, right, in our community, And then we kind of focus on that. And that's how, hey, actually most of our strength is not to serve a segment that we are not serving, you know, very right. But we have to kind of build on our strength, which is these people are educated, they have skills. How do we channel them to help charities? And we found a product market fit just by doing those, you know, test programs. So I think that is the most important thing. Like we never thought that, you know, and when we first started the idea, we never thought, hey, let's just do this idea and we're going to scale to like, you know, 100 cities and this would be fun to do. We never thought that we would get there, but it's always back to the tiny, tiny interaction we have with our users and see, does that make sense on that micro level? If it does, then you can scale it on a macro level because this would work for everybody in that sector.
Yep, no, exactly right. Because when you get the fundamentals down and you're really certain that there's this really good fit between what you're offering and how people are using whatever product it is or whatever idea it is, then you're able to scale that on a wider level. So I think that's an amazing thought to end with. Fionn, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. And I know that our listeners are really going to enjoy this conversation. So thank you again for taking the time to do this.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Scalescape. If you like this content, check out Scalescape on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. I would love to hear your thoughts, comments, and suggestions. I'll see you next week.